Stand by for the opening night of the National Television Service.
First there was television. Then came the internet.
The big screen in your living room is fed up with the competition from all those smaller screens that are with us at home, at work, and at play.
Garris, move up.
In 2011, the dumb receiver, the old idiot box, just got smart.
It's internet and TV combined. It's movies, music, and apps. All streamed through the internet with best-in-class picture quality. The future of TV is here.
The buzz in consumer retailing and media conferences this year is all about connected TV. Your specially smart screen will soon be connected directly to the internet and every other digital device that you may be using. Laptop or PC, smartphone, your iPad or tablet, and even to a microchip embedded in your socks.
This is the moment you've all been waiting for.
It's the multi-screen experience in your digital living room and beyond. Time! Welcome to Background Briefing on ABC Radio National. I'm Stan Correy. Why is it all happening? Well, it's hard to get any real critical analysis. Everyone who knows something about it has an agenda to push. The ABC, the BBC, News Corporation. One thing we do know, audiences are simply not connecting with what's on offer on the big TV screen. An increasing number of people are going over the top, getting their television directly from the internet to their PCs, laptops and tablets. A couple of weeks ago, at a connected TV summit in Britain, the reality for the big screen industry was laid out.
I think the interest of this conference is should be focused particularly on the large screen and the television. The reality today, not surprisingly, is that most people are still consuming online television and video on their PCs. We found that 22% of the total sample across the US and Europe have at some point used their PC to watch television and online video. 7% today are saying that they are at some point connecting a PC directly to a TV. 8% are watching online content on some kind of portable device, typically a smartphone. 7% claim to be using some sort of dedicated connected television device. We don't know specifically what they are. Apple TV is there only as an example. It could also be connected Blu-ray players and so on. And not surprisingly, we do see strong demographic patterns. As I think is well aware to most of the people in the audience, it's the younger age groups that are leading this transition or this change towards PC usage. More than 40% of under 25s today are consuming television or video on their computers, and that diminishes quite rapidly towards the older demographics.
That's David Mercer from Strategy Analytics in the UK, who also said that most of that young demographic download their television without paying anyone except their internet service provider. No wonder the marketing of connected TV is frenetic at the moment. You may have more choices than you can imagine, but with connected television, the content owners will have more control, and you may have to pay a lot more. But who and how will all these connected devices be serviced, repaired, fixed, or explained? Who's in control? The manufacturers of the devices, the content providers, the internet service provider, the government? And that's the $64 billion question. Everyone's keen to sell you the technology. No one's too keen on explaining the complexities. There's a government review of convergence, and there's plenty of lobbying as the media and technology industries try to make sure self-regulation remains the preferred method of dealing with problems.
Well, can you be more specific? You can't. Okay, please hold.
Especially when it comes to who takes responsibility if things don't work.
Oh, come on.
Thank you for calling Big Pond. This is Sanjeev. How can I help you today?
Yes, I have a bit of a problem with my internet connection, and I was wondering if you could help me.
Certainly, madam. Now, may I start by importuning the nature of the matter that is interfering with your repos?
What?
I am trying to ascertain with some particularity the nature of the problematic schema that is afflicting your mainframe's override.
I'm sorry, I really can't understand your accent. Could you maybe say that again more simply?
Certainly, madam. My question is whether at the present propitious moment in time you are experiencing a problematic episode that arises because of the connection override of your power source switch.
Look, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're saying. Could you maybe take me through that again, more slowly, so that I can get some actual service?
Most certainly I can. Now, what I was trying to extract with some certitude before was whether the service tech problem is what's constituted...
Look, don't worry about it, all right? Do you call that service? You are useless. Thanks for nothing, dickhead.
I mean, you might cop a bit more abuse, but these fake Indian accents sure get them off the line quick, don't they? Welcome to Big Pond. This is Dicker speaking. How may I help you?
In 4 years, it's claimed almost 2 billion digital TV homes around the world will be ready and waiting to be entertained, informed and persuaded. From Parks Associates in Dallas, Texas, Kurt Sharp.
I do think that the interface or the user experience is a key battleground in winning the hearts, but more importantly, the wallets of the consumer. And I think we're in an era when consumers are really overwhelmed with all of the content choices that we can be receiving. I think the advent of online access into our television environment has obviously opened up the choices exponentially.
Competition is fierce. The big corporations like Apple and Google and even the electronics firms that build flat-screen digital TVs are now in competition with the Murdochs of the world, who also make lots of digital toys.
Who needs TV? I get everything I want on my PC, and most of it's for free.
For example, did you know that News Corporation has a major investment in a digital technology company, NDS Group, and here's how they sell themselves.
With my pay TV supplier, it's easy to find shows that I like and record to a DVR, but I can't transfer shows to my PC or phone. Whatever happened to anywhere, anytime, on any device?
The one company that can lead you to new worlds of opportunity, NDS.
News Corporation owns 49% of NDS Group. News describes it as a company that makes innovative technologies. NDS makes digital set-top boxes and communication software for broadband television networks and for making the digital living room work smoothly. And in a roundabout way, it was News Corporation's intense interest in set-top boxes for pensioners at budget time that got Background Briefing interested in connected TV and to the wider issue of who's responsible for what in the converging media. This digital world is full of skirmishes, and everyone, not only pensioners, is a bit confused about all the choices.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ken Simon, and I oversee the Xbox division here in the Heartland. And today we're going to talk about the war for the living room and what that means to the entertainment ecosystem. With the proliferation of broadband services across the globe, now we have more choices than we've ever had in this ever-changing digital living room. Which does take me to my first agenda point, which is, oh goodness, the boxes and the choices. It is okay as consumers if you are confused with all the different boxes and services that are coming into our homes. And as marketers, it's okay to feel that this is a bit of a daunting task, because it is, to figure out what are all these boxes doing in our lives.
Our lives will be different. If you're concerned about viruses or hacking or privacy now, wait till everything talks to everything else. In the future, if you're not connected, if you don't have a digital device like a smartphone or tablet, then you may not be able to access some essential services. All the most influential players in media are into being connected. Last week, the BBC launched its news app for connected TV, specifically a Samsung Smart TV. But even as the marketing push gets underway, there are lingering concerns. There are no longer audiences or viewers. We're consumers, customers and subscribers, and we get angry when customer service gets difficult and things go wrong.
I can do anything for you that a supervisor can do.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that there's no one here who can help you.
Can I have a supervisor, please?
No, sir. You may not talk with the supervisor. I can give you the number for the Customer Assistance Center if you wish to file a complaint.
I do wish to file a complaint.
Okay.
And I will file a complaint.
Okay, you're more than welcome to do that. I believe anyone you talk to will tell you that if you need help with software, that
listen,
you have to call.
Don't talk to me like some stupid idiot. I know what I'm talking about, and you don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, sir. Well,
and you're supposed to be nice to people. You shouldn't be nasty. You should be cooperative.
I can't help you if I don't know how, sir.
Listen, don't talk to me that way. I'm a human being and I'm a person. And you don't have a right to talk condescending to me. And don't talk down to me. Who the hell do you think you are? You got some nerve.
The content providers talk about choices and how easy it is to jump from big screen to small screens. But hiding behind all the smart screens are issues like technology support, privacy, and cybersecurity. One reason, things are getting increasingly complex. From Sophos Security, on the phone, Paul Ducklin.
Let's just assume for a moment that we can treat that smart TV as a general purpose computer, which is actually really what it is inside, used for a specific purpose. In other words, if you could open it up and if you could take all the chips and reassemble them somewhere else without the TV part, it's very likely you could make a computer that would perform perhaps like a slow version of your laptop or your desktop PC or even a file server. So therefore, all the risks that we've learned about over the years to PCs and servers on the internet, and I'm thinking if we go back 10 years, the slammer virus, the blaster virus, the Melissa virus, you know, all of these things that we've learned to be wary and leery of and that we've learned to defend against in programming on our PCs are surely things that we can't ignore when we're using exactly the same sort of hardware and software technology to deliver a television. Or, for all we know in the future, depending on what marketing you believe, refrigerators, washing machines and the like.
Background Briefing has been told that there are players in the business of connected television who are trying to hide this underlying complexity and conceal it from the end user by having simple interface systems that supposedly make it easy to use the technology. They say, let customer service deal with the complaints about billing, faults and so on, but don't regulate us. We hate regulations. They insist it's government bureaucracy that stuffs up in the fast-moving digital age. All the problems revolve around a single word, connect. There's a literary quotation that's becoming popular at conferences about connected television. Here's a reading of a key paragraph from Ian Forster's novel, Howard's End.
Only connect. Only connect the prose and the passion, and both will be exalted, and human love will be seen at its height. Live in fragments no longer. Only connect.
There are conferences every week now on all this. In Chicago, this one, for example.
Cable Show kicks off today in Chicago. Liz Clayman is there speaking with the cable industry's movers and shakers, including an exclusive chat with Chase Carey, Deputy Chairman of News Corporation, the parent company of this network. Hi, Liz. So how is News Corp evolving as content delivery continues to change? Liz?
Well, that is the...
Fox News failed to connect with its reporter, Liz Clayman, only for a moment. She had a number of questions for her super powerful boss. The one question that concerns our story was the big issue at the cable show, fear. Fear that consumers are abandoning the big screen for laptops, smartphones and tablets. Here's how Chase Carey responded.
Well, what is clear, customers are going to watch, want to watch what they want to watch, what they want to watch, when they want to watch. And whether that's on a TV screen, a PC screen, an iPad screen, we have to deliver that experience. They're going to want a richer experience that gives them transactional capabilities, social capabilities, you know, interactive capabilities. We've got to deliver those experiences to the customer. If we deliver an experience the customer values and is rewarding and meets their expectations, I think we've got a great future. I think we've done it to date. but we've got to continue to do it. It's a faster moving world than ever, and so we've got to make sure when you get an iPad, you want to get exciting stuff on it like Fox News, you know, you can get it.
We'll be seeing Chase later coming up. We've got a
You want, you point, you get. Introducing the LG Smart TV with Magic Motion Remote. A world of entertainment awaits.
The selling point in more ways than one is interactivity, as illustrated in this ad from LG, the consumer electronics firm.
Just point, click, and you're in control. The LG Smart TV. Simply smarter.
So there you sit with your magical, marvellous remote and point at this and that to integrate your emails with your TV, your shopping with your sidebar of things to buy. You can send something through your phone to a friend. You can download, save, mash, and forward everything to everyone and vice versa. You can probably even turn the coffee on and check the fridge. Monitoring the interactive media smart hub is an analyst from Parks Associates in Dallas, Texas, Kurt Scharf.
A good example is the home shopping network. So instead of jumping online on a separate computer or picking up the phone and calling, the idea is that you would see a product that you like and then simply click over using your remote control and place the product order. And that was all constrained to the TV set itself. Then with the introduction of these tablets, I think that notion changed significantly and companies really started to think about the ways in which a secondary device like the tablet could be useful for allowing a very personalized interactive experience with the content that is being displayed on the TV, but without infringing on the enjoyment of the entire family who's sitting in the same living room. And that was really something I took away from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas back in January, just this whole notion of how a viewer's television experience is going to change because of these portable devices.
Note that Kurt Scharf says it's going to change, because while there will be plenty of devices in the digital living room, there's still no killer app that puts them all together in a seamless way. The trouble is, if everything is connected seamlessly, what happens to copyright, or ownership, or privacy? Rupert and James Murdoch are very adamant about people not stealing their content. Wall Street analyst Mariana Viola is especially interested in the investment potential of the digital living room. That's how manufacturers will make their money. His main interest is the technology providers, the set-top box makers, the software designers. Whoever creates a device, he says, that helps connect the connected world will dominate consumer electronics. On the phone from New York, Mariana Viola.
It's very difficult to make these devices seamlessly interact with each other because there are different protocols for streaming these devices. So not every provider or component manufacturer can build a set-top box or a mobile device and have it interact seamlessly with Apple iTunes or with a Mac hardware. So what I also had in mind was basically making it easy for consumers, for the content, once it's on your television set, how do you aggregate this content? How do you sort it? How do you organize it by topic, by theme, so that it's easy for you to pick and choose what content you want to view at that certain time, because all the content is dispersed and someone has to aggregate it for you.
So in a sense, everyone is working on promising us everything, but not promising anything about exactly who will fix your faults or answer your customer service inquiry. This is Background Briefing on ABC Radio National. I'm Stan Correy, and we're talking about the digital living room and beyond. The Korean company Samsung stated last week that it had sold 2 million internet-connected televisions in the past 3 months. Here's a taste of their marketing pitch.
Television is about to change forever. The revolutionary new Samsung Smart TV will immerse you in full HD 3D vision that will take your breath away. You'll be able to access your compatible multimedia library with Search All, along with your favorite websites. The new Samsung Smart TV. Immerse yourself in a world of endless entertainment.
Out at Homebush in Sydney's western suburbs, Samsung Australia has its headquarters. And so Background Briefing paid them a visit.
Hi.
Evan.
Hi, Evan.
It's hard not to be impressed with the technology of modern televisions. The big screens look fantastic. Now, the internet connection was a bit slow because of the firewall. But since internet service is a real problem for a lot of Australians, that made the demonstration of smart TV seem more real. Evan Manolis from the Samsung marketing team shows me some of the features of smart TV.
So this is your actual TV user interface, and from here you can control everything. You also got the Samsung apps area, and you can see it on the right hand side. Now that apps there is everything from YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. And you can do all that on your TV. You can Facebook, Twitter, you can play games, there's exercise TV there as well, there's yoga, there's kids games. So there's a lot of apps there for everyone in the family. On the left hand side you got your video. And that section there really is a recommendation of movies that you can watch. So it automatically searches a movie from Telstra or Catch-Up TV or the free-to-air channels for you to watch. Very smart feature. That's why it's called a smart TV, to be able to search all those files. But more importantly, we touched on this before.
In the past, the content makers led the technology experts. In the future, it's the technology providers who'll call the shots. Different technology companies with competing products all want their digital device or their software system to provide the interactivity. From Ovum Media Consultants in Melbourne, Tim Renauden.
I mean, there's a number of consumer technology companies that are notorious for avoiding standards for a variety of reasons, partly to do with control and partly because there's not always a standard that's suitable for enabling the kind of services that those companies want to produce. So they go and build their own or modify a standard in a way that suits the services they want to offer. This is a problem that we've been seeing in the smartphone market, particularly over the last few years, where there's probably five or six platforms with significant market share, which creates problems in terms of you can't download an app on one phone and necessarily have it work on another phone. Or if you're developing an application for one platform, it won't work on all of the other platforms. So this is a problem that's going to happen in the living room as well.
And perhaps in your sock drawer as well. Here's how the 10 Network's 7pm project had the story last week.
For more on the future, we crossed to Kitty Flanagan in Sydney. Now, Kitty, what's all this about intelligent socks?
Oh, mate, I can't wait to get down to that forum. I'm going to showcase my own prototype of an intelligent sock, and here he is now. His name's Chester. Hello, Chester. Hello. I say, would you mind removing your prehensile appendage from my fundament? See? That is a smart sock. A dumb sock would just say, hey, you, get your hand out of my ass. Seriously, though, socks, they're the future, really. I was thinking robots, cyborgs, maybe some kind of time travel pod. Definitely thought this was the year they'd unveil the jetpack. But no, the future is socks that have microchips so they can find each other and pair up in your sock drawer. And sure, that's how it starts. But what happens when the technology turns on the humans like it always does? One sock does a runner, hides out somewhere, and then starts sending his buddy tips on how he can escape. Bam, before you know it, you just lost two socks, my friend, not to mention two very expensive microchips.
Kitty, you did an amazing job making socks fascinating, man.
In the future, everyone's house will be a total entertainment centre. In the future, TV will be so good that the printed word would function as an art form only.
There's a lot of tension in the digital market, but it's not about socks yet. Part of the war for control involves the future of set-top boxes. Not the set-top boxes that the federal government started to roll out to pensioners last year as part of the switch to digital television, but much more complex devices. Not all digital set-top boxes are the same. Some are very cheap and are becoming redundant as your flashy flat screen takes over. But others are more expensive. There are hybrid set-top boxes that act like computers, game console boxes that do more than play games. Some of these boxes will be the smart hubs that control all those devices in your living room. Former BBC digital television executive William Cooper.
Well, there's another worldview here that there'll be a sort of digital multimedia gateway and there'll be a central hub and everything connects to this. And I suppose it really depends which particular part of the industry you come from. So telcos, for instance, might like to see the concept of this media gateway that they, of course, would control and provide and service that would deliver to smart televisions around the home and to other devices. But consumers might well just prefer to go to the shops and buy a screen themselves and not have a centralised hub.
William Cooper, and he also told Background Briefing that in all the excitement about connected TV, there are two things everyone wants to know about. Will Apple set up its own TV network and cloud computing?
So, you're filming at the beach, the one that's going to make young Harry a star. Only a pelican comes and swallows your phone. But that's okay, because the fish are putting the footage somewhere safe.
It's in there with the cloud computing means our virtual lives, photos, documents, movies, and your software are stored not on your hard drive or your set-top box or on the TV screen, but in giant data centres owned by Google, Amazon, and now Samsung. And that means freeing up our digital devices from the constraints of storage and memory and accessing all our stuff more quickly and on demand, because it's all stored elsewhere.
Look, the only problems you have is whether your internet is down. Mm. Simple.
When Background Briefing visited Samsung's display rooms, we were told that one of the reasons Samsung Smart TV works so well is that everything is in the cloud.
All the contents are stored on what we call a cloud computing.
So this is connected to the cloud.
Yeah. Right. So it's all stored back in Korea in a cloud computing. So it's not actually dialing into anything. It's not actually dialing into an actual website. Telstra, for example, the big palm moves, it's already stored in a location. So depending on what you pick, I explain to people it's the same way like on an airplane. You know, when you're on demand on Qantas, you're not dialing into any network. It's stored on a hard drive, right? And you're accessing it. That's exactly what it is.
Evan Manolis. Being in the cloud means everyone playing or working will have a more diverse, supercalifragilistic experience. But as what the experts call functionality improves, so does the chance of digital hackers, criminals in the cloud. Not many people have been worrying about cybersecurity and connected TV, but it's a looming issue, and there's good reason. The all-important younger demographic access their TV programming through game consoles, their Xboxes, Sony PlayStations. In April, the Sony PlayStation network was hacked. Last week, it was the Sega game network. What's to stop the same problems occurring in the cloud? From Sophos Security, Paul Ducklin.
Well, security in the cloud is one of the great unanswered questions in the future. Of course, a lot of people who blindly accepted that those other people probably were the experts may be rethinking in the light of data breaches like Epsilon, like Sony, like Amazon's Elastic Cloud going down. That wasn't supposed to happen, but yet it did. And I think that should be giving people pause, not to say we're not going to use the cloud, but maybe to take with a pinch of salt some of the claims that seem to be made by some of the providers that say this will solve all of your problems and better yet, it'll solve them for free.
Here in Australia, we may think of Amazon as an online retailer, but in the US, it's also in the TV business. It has a video streaming service direct to your computer. Last week, German researchers found that Amazon's cloud was leaking badly. There's a link to their report on Background Briefing's website. Paul Ducklin again.
Inevitably, unfortunately, business growth seems to trump security. So it seems to be that our approach, unfortunately, for new sorts of devices, get the device out there, let people see what it can do, and then worry about whether there are security holes in it later. If you were to deal with all of that stuff first, it might slow down your short-term business growth, but by golly, it really ought to improve the value of your business to you and to your customers in the long term.
And save you the cost of cleaning up after the mess.
Indeed, because imagine that if your TV has a web browser that is powerful and standards compliant enough to allow you to do internet banking, then perhaps you'll just do it while you're sitting around in the lounge room and you won't get up and go and get your laptop out and connect to the internet in the same way that people these days are going, oh, well, I've got my phone, I can use it for phone calls and internet banking.
And what if your socks got hacked while you were watching connected TV and doing your internet banking?
Is the future going to be very microchippy? It's also going to be rather vague. So let me try and explain the Internet of Things.
On the 10 Network's 7pm project, Kitty Flanagan had this exclusive last week. And this is the second part.
This means all your household objects and personal items will have their own microchip and web address. As if we don't have enough ways to waste time, now we're going to get Twitter feeds from our socks and undies. Still, where does it end? Once appliances start emailing, it won't be long before you're getting emails from some oven in Nigeria claiming that a long-lost oven has died and left you a really big pie. That's it. I'm done. I'll see you in the future.
When things go wrong in the digital world, there are consequences for government and for business. And as we depend more on digital services, the issue of who's responsible for fixing it becomes incredibly controversial. Who monitors the billing transactions between the TV, the PC, smartphone and tablet, and now your socks? What happens when your smartphone refuses to interact with your smart TV? Or when digital hackers jump from your PC to your set-top box and beyond? Do you ring customer service? But which company? The TV set manufacturer, the ISP, the telco, the set-top box manufacturer? Or what about the government? Are they to blame? Swinburne University media academic Jock Given.
So if you switch on your television at night and it doesn't work, say you decide you want to watch ABC iView on your connected TV, the one you've just bought, and you switch it on and it doesn't seem to work. Who's responsible for that? Is it the TV set manufacturer? Is it the ABC because there's a problem in iView? Is it the company that's providing your internet service that you're using wireless distribution inside your house? Is there a device that you've bought yourself separately from your internet service provider that is redistributing the signal inside the house, and should you have to go down to the consumer electronics store to get that fixed? So there's a range of different kinds of problems.
Complicated for consumers, but politically dangerous for government if the digital living room doesn't work.
Well, you can see the government's response with digital TV transition. Clearly, they are very concerned, as any government would be, about the politics of a lot of people being made big promises about the communications future. They go out, they buy devices, they buy services from providers, and they discover that it doesn't work and that you need to be a bit of a tech aficionado to make it work. Now, that's the kind of problem that is a very real one for government. It's real in relation to digital TV because this is a government policy. The government said this was going to happen. And for all the broadcasters who are involved in building the infrastructure, providing the services, all of that, it's very clear that if it doesn't work well, the government is going to carry the can for it.
And all of that hit the shock jock airwaves just before the budget.
You know, Alan, years ago, or a couple of years ago, we had a real nice big television, and when we got the $900, my wife said, I think we better get a new one because they're bringing these newfangled things in and, you know, we mightn't be able to afford it later on. So I went out and bought a new television, and I think it's a digital one. But now they say we're going to have a top box, a top set box for the jolly thing.
Well, I think there's going to be something in the budget about all that, isn't there?
What that was all about was that someone was trying to pin the problems on the government. It in fact started as far back as 2008, when columnist Piers Ackerman raised it. Here's a reading.
The little diagrams, helpfully included, are rarely of much use either. The illustrators are wont to take extraordinary liberties with their models, adding features which aren't actually present and deleting others which quite obviously are. Little wonder the federal government is proceeding slowly with its plan to replace analogue television with a digital signal. No one would be able to write instructions clearly enough to permit Australians to connect the required set-top box necessary to make older television sets receive the new signal.
The federal Labor government did listen to what Piers Ackerman wrote in his column in the Daily Telegraph in 2008. They proceeded slowly, consulted widely with consumer groups, hired experts familiar with the digital switchover in the UK, all in the cause of helping people like Piers Ackerman connect. The federal government's household assistance scheme was designed to provide set-top boxes for elderly and disadvantaged groups who were unable to connect for themselves. Australia's shift from analogue to digital began in Mildura in rural Victoria. It was almost 12 months ago at a politically sensitive time. Kevin Rudd had just lost his job as Prime Minister and a federal election was looming.
Now to Mildura in northwest Victoria, where from 9 o'clock this morning, if you don't have a digital television or a set-top box, you're not going to be able to watch free-to-air television anymore.
The Communications Minister, Stephen Conroy, is in Mildura for the switch and he joins us now. Minister, good morning. Why Mildura?
We had a very high uptake. It was the most digital ready and we've seen a tremendous response here in Mildura. We're tracking over 95% now. We've had 2,500 installations on the government's installation program for pensioners and veterans and disabled individuals who qualified. And so the people of Mildura have got right behind this transformation.
Let's see what happens, shall we?
The TV crew also went into the home of an ordinary Mildura family, who made a history lesson out of it.
What do you think of that, boys?
Weird. Annoying.
Did you think it would just go like that, or did you think
I thought it would have gone, digital switch over is starting at 5, 4,
yeah, that would have been good.
3, 2,
quick, rush out and buy a set-top
box. 1, at the last second you hook up your set-top box. Yay!
Oh, you just remembered history, though.
Yeah.
That Mildura family wasn't in a hurry to get digital television. History was made, but the talk in the media of the time was about the switchover. A background briefing search of news databases, including those belonging to News Limited, could find no reports of seething discontent about pensioners getting help with set-top boxes. There were glitches, but if there'd been major problems, like set-top boxes blowing up, you would have thought the airwaves at the time would be crowded with calls about government incompetence, especially a government with a new Prime Minister facing an election. The calls did come, but almost a year later, when it suddenly became a political hot potato. It was announced a few days before the budget that the household assistance scheme would be continued. Here's a caller to Ray Hadley on Sydney radio station 2GB.
Warren, g'day.
Good morning, how are you?
Good, Warren.
Mate, I've actually got at home three different types of TV set up. I've got the brand new LCD that gets all the channels.
Right.
I've got an old plasma TV with the set-top box that gets all the channels.
Right.
And I've got an analog TV out in the sunroom that I watch the footy on.
Right.
And it's got a set-top box on it. But when 1HD went from digital to HD,
right,
completely, I don't get that anymore, mate. I only get the digital channels through the analog TV. You don't get the HD channels through it.
I see. So if they go from that to high definition, you don't get them on yours. You see, one of the things, Warren, I think the Treasurer knows as much about this as me, which is nothing. and I'm fearful because he knows nothing about it, that this email from Dave at Wyoming is going to be right, that we've got another BER, insulation solar power, where we'll see $30 for the box, $3.20 for the cable, half an hour instruction on its use, and then the total invoice to the government will be $4,000.
In the next few weeks, there was coverage of the set-top boxes on radio, television and in the print media. It was essentially the same story. The scheme was a disaster waiting to happen. Anyone who didn't have that view was irrelevant and simply not tech-savvy. The consumer groups who'd been involved in setting up the scheme were amazed by the post-budget media frenzy about set-top boxes, but they couldn't get a word in. They desperately wanted to keep the household assistance scheme because it meant so much to lower-income consumers. One of those groups is ACAN, the Australian Communications Consumer Network. The CEO of ACAN is Theresa Corbin. The media rang them, but didn't use what they had to say.
I mean, after the budget, we were contacted by somebody at the Courier Mail, and we were asked whether, in fact, this was, did we know about the household assistance scheme? And we said yes. And we were asked, whether we thought it was another pink bats. And we said, no, we don't think that. In fact, we think it's quite an important scheme. And we represented our concerns and why we thought the household assistance scheme was absolutely vital. We were asked whether we thought the fact that it, perhaps it was was overpriced, and we said we explained it wasn't a standard installation and we believe the price was reasonable to ensure universal accessibility, either because you live in a more regional or rural area or because you need a particular set-top box that's accessible. Now, we were very disappointed that none of our comments were ever reported in that paper.
The reporter also asked about accreditation for the tradespeople who would install the boxes. Again, ACAN told the reporter that their organisation, along with others, had been consulted about this issue and had no concerns. News Limited led the way in pushing the idea that set-top boxes for pensioners were another Pink Bats debacle. The Courier Mail is part of the News Limited group of papers. Teresa Corbin.
So they were just looking for the headline and not really interested in the facts. When we don't make statements or comments that actually support the headline they want, then quite often we don't get reported. And that is really disappointing. But when you've got something that really is, you know, giving benefits to vulnerable consumers, then it's even more important that the information is not misrepresented.
So why was there suddenly such a fuss about technology support for the digital switchover? News Limited and its parent News Corporation will actually benefit from the switch to broadband networks. One of their companies actually produces set-top boxes and the communications software that helps their pay TV subscribers get their programs. At a recent media marketing conference, a News Limited executive, when questioned about the incessant attacks on the federal Labor government, replied that as a media company, they had a responsibility to make governments accountable for their actions. That answer was a bit rich, considering that News Corporation is a significant investor in Australian pay television, and that a long-running consumer issue is the lack of accountability of Australian pay television providers. If you have a complaint about their set-top boxes, billing or installation, there's no independent arbiter. Over the past decade, the ACCC and the Productivity Commission have recommended that the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, the TIO, extend its jurisdiction to pay television. But the pay TV industry is dead against it. And they've said that again recently in a submission to the government review of the TIO. The Ombudsman's view is that in the era of convergence, consumers need guidance more than ever. Simon Cohen.
One of the things that I find quite interesting from our perspective is that although technologies have changed over time, and as a result, they've been, I think, more complex and sometimes less easy to understand products and services that are available to consumers, and I think there are a range of things that contribute to that. There is, nevertheless, underlying that, a similarity to a number of the issues that we've seen over the years that the TIO has been in operation. So people having disputes about the bills they receive from their service providers, having fault issues, connection issues that they're unable to get resolved, saying that they can't get the customer service they expect, or being unable to access complaint handling processes of their providers. So those sorts of themes, regardless of the technology, run through the complaints that the TIO has dealt with over the past couple of decades.
In his submission to the Convergence Review, Simon Cohen asked for more appropriate consumer protection to cope with the special demands of convergence. Complaints about converged services are increasing as more consumers are getting involved.
Some of the additional complexity that's coming out of the bundled products that consumers are receiving can add to the potential for there to be customer service issues and complaint matters, because there's not a full understanding of what it is that the consumer has contracted to receive, or they receive a bill that they don't expect that's higher than they thought it would be, or they get a product that actually doesn't really suit either their financial means or the needs that they have when they're using the service. And I think that those are areas that are only likely to become increasingly complex as an increased range of services, of devices, become available to families and become part of their everyday life.
Media coverage of problems with installation and customer service in pay TV is almost non-existent. But go on the internet and look at the digital technology forums, and the language is angry and much more virulent than News Limited reporting on set-top boxes for pensioners. here's a selection of some comments from the Whirlpool Forum, edited for language.
So I found this discussion via Google, as I'm facing a pretty similar situation. Foxtel had placed me on a 6-month contract, but failed to advise me the same, and this detail was not available in the My Accounts page on Foxtel. I just spoke to the operator, which then I had the call escalated to his supervisor, and he too said that such information is not available to the consumer.
Customers are angry not only at the pay TV provider, but the lack of political action about consumer protection.
The company should be obliged to honour what its employee offered in its name. But the main thrust of my point is to alert your state and federal lawmakers to the amount of customer abuse that exists in this area. You'll be helping by building consumer protection for the future from these monopolies.
And in an industry where the abundance of choices is the incessant theme of marketing campaigns, consumers complain about lack of competition.
I had a similar experience, a take-it-or-leave-it attitude from Foxtel. I'm not going to bore everyone with details, only to say, yes, we need an ombudsman for pay TV, and there is no competition now.
None of these comments have been checked for accuracy, but most of the issues that pay TV subscribers complain about on these internet forums reflect the tone of the comments or inquiries made to the telecommunications industry ombudsman. And the TIO gets about 100 inquiries a month about pay TV services in Australia. Simon Cohen.
Because we're unable to deal with them, we don't capture detailed information about the sorts of issues that they raise. Instead, our process is to refer our consumers to places that might be able to deal with those matters, including, for example, the offices of fair trading within states and territories. But I think one of the unsatisfactory aspects of that is if a consumer has an issue that concerns one part of the service that we can deal with, for example, a telephone or internet issue, but a separate aspect about a matter that we can't, then it is simply from a consumer's perspective, I think, unreasonable and unfair to expect that they would have to go to two separate places to have what in essence, in their view, is a single dispute looked at and resolved.
Simon Cohen. Swinburne University media academic Jock Given.
The problem is it's not just pay TV and the internet and mobile telecommunications and television and radio broadcasting and newspapers that are converging. It's communications and banking. It's communications and retailing. It's communications and airlines. Everyone is using the internet, broadband, increasingly television for all kinds of related purposes. So I don't think you're ever going to be able to draw neat borders around all of this and say we are going to have a simple one-stop shop. You are always going to have regulators that have got to deal with each other, sort out those border disputes. It is absolutely essential that however many regulators or complaint systems we've got in place, they're working extremely closely with each other to ensure that what the consumer gets is sensible, quick, cheap resolution of complaints, not buck-passing from one regulator to another, which ends up helping no one.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research by Anna Whitfeld. Thanks to Network 10 for extracts from the 7pm project. The technical operator is Mark Don and the executive producer is Kirsten Garrett. There are links to reports mentioned in this story on our website and you can put up your thoughts on the story at the comments link. I'm Stan Correy and you're listening to ABC Radio National.